Okay. Hi. Okay, so now that we've talked about what a simplicial complex is, and Soren has presented various uses of them, I want to now go back and change what you think a simplicial complex is. So you should consider yourself lucky if you weren't too set on one notion of what a simplicial complex was in the first place, because it's actually one of many possible ways of realizing the abstract combinatorial situation. So just to, for coherence, let's recall what an abstract simplicial complex is. And then I want to give a slightly varied notation for what its geometric realization is. So we're using, as always, that we're defining the full simplex to be the set of all subsets of the set 1 through n, I'll use consistently throughout my lecture. And then X is a simplicial complex if it is a collection of subsets, perhaps not all subsets, perhaps not any, such that if F belongs to X and G is a subset of F, then G belongs to X. Okay? So it's closed under taking subsets. And the idea is that this is a purely combinatorial definition. Anytime we recognize this relationship among subsets in any situation, such as an algebra or combinatorics, we want to think of a simplicial complex. And then we want to consider as relevant ideas of topology, such as homology groups and Alexander duality, which is something I'm going to introduce in this lecture. A primary example, which we've seen so far, I want to slightly define the notation differently, is the geometric realization. And the idea is that you think of the geometric realization as a union of simplices. Okay? And so the idea is to let, I'm going to use single absolute value signs, let the geometric realization of X in the first orthant. So I take n space, but then I only consider vectors all of whose coordinates are non-negative. And I want it to be defined by, now here's the version of the definition that generalizes, that a point P belongs to X if and only if two conditions hold. The first condition is that the sum of the coordinates be equal to 1. And the second condition is that the support set of the point, in other words, the set of non-zero coordinates, the indices of the non-zero coordinates of the point, belongs to our original complex X. Okay? So we recover X from its realization, more or less. Okay? I want to convince you this is a slightly defective view of an abstract simplicial complex. But usually we recover X from its realization by taking subsets of 1 through n whenever the corresponding standard simplex on those vertices is contained in the realization. Okay? So, and then parenthetically, in the situation we'd like to fix is we are stumped when X realization is empty. Okay? And the reason we're stumped is we don't know, did X come from the empty complex, or did X come from the void complex? This differing only by whether or not the empty set was present or not. Since you can't see either, looking at a geometric realization. Okay, so now advantages. This is, for people familiar with realizations of simplicial complexes, the advantage of this is the most familiar one. this is both an advantage and a disadvantage. If you get too hooked on the idea that this is the right one, then it impedes your seeing other ones which are equally valid and which may be in the situations you're studying. Another advantage is that homology theory agrees with others for the geometric realization. In other words, if you've studied any homology theory for a topological space, then simplicial homology for the abstract simplicial complex will agree with those homology theories you've studied for the realization of this space. And then the disadvantages is what to do about the empty set, and the idea that it's not the only valid way kind of simplicial complex. Okay, so another kind of realization, which is an example of a simplicial complex, is what we would call a linear realization. Okay. The difference being a linear realization, instead of being a union of simplices, is to view the space as a union of coordinate subspaces. Okay. So I can modify the definition that I just used only slightly, and I get almost exactly the same thing. Let, now I'll use double absolute value signs, let the linear realization of X considered as a subset of Rn, and now I don't restrict to the first coordinate, and be defined by P is in the linear realization if and only if the support of P belongs to the original simplicial complex. And as a special case, we can take P equal to the origin, and the support, we take the support of the origin to be the empty set, and the linear realization faithfully captures all the different simplicial complexes. And that's actually the one that we prefer to work with for algebraic purposes. Okay, so let me do an example. The example I'd like to do in three dimensions is take the empty set 1, 2, 3, and 1, 2. I'm leaving off braces and commas on the inside. So when I write 1, 2, I mean the subset 1, comma 2, and so forth. And I can draw the following pictures. So this is my first coordinate, my second coordinate, my third coordinate. And we can compare these different models. Because what is the linear realization? The linear realization of X would be, you can tell with the maximal faces of the simplicial complex, 1, 2 is a maximal face and 3 is a maximal face. Correspondingly, I take the coordinate plane 1, 2 as a maximal coordinate space sitting inside here, and I take the union with the coordinate axis 3. Okay? And that gives me the linear realization. Corresponding to that, I could also take the geometric realization, the usual one studied in topology, and I would get, if this is 1, 2, 3, then I would get the line segment between 1 and 2 union the vertex 3 as an isolated vertex. And the relationship between these is if you take the geometric realization of the full simplex, and you draw that in our same copy of R3, then we had the standard simplex, they had the standard full simplex, then you can see that the intersection of the linear realization with the standard full simplex gives us the geometric realization. Okay, so this should be a familiar pattern. Where is this pattern familiar from? Well, when you study affine and projective geometry, exactly the same situation arises. Okay. So the idea in affine and projective geometry would be that you might have a projective curve. I'll draw an Rn because it's easier. But I think of this curve as a union of lines. Okay. Viewed so project a curve viewed as a union of lines, and I'll work in x, y, and z space. And so this is the affine space of one bigger dimension sitting over the projective two space, is what I'm drawing here. And what I would intersect with instead in this case, the classic thing to intersect with in projective geometry, is to take an affine plane away from the origin. And one such affine plane would be to take the plane z equals 1. And, you know, so if this is the affine plane, z equals 1, and I look at what I get in my intersection, well, I don't even want to draw three coordinates anymore. The answer lives inside the z equals 1 plane implicitly. So my original coordinates, you know, get sliced out like this. And I see just a circle. So this is the affine curve that corresponds to the original projective curve for this particular affine piece. Okay? So you can see the spirit is almost the same. This is a different affine piece. Some of the variables equals 1. But then we're also imposing a positivity condition in order to get simplices. And as was quite familiar in the projective geometry setting, you don't see the whole picture whenever you study a given affine piece. You know, if there are points at infinity, they're missing on a given affine piece. But even more specifically, we can distinguish there are actually two different situations in the larger space which we cannot distinguish between when we take the affine piece. And that is the difference between the one-point set. So we have just the origin, and we have nothing. Okay, and if one is studying these three in these three variables x, y, z, then what is the polynomial ideal I sitting inside the polynomial ring in x, y, and z, which defines just this one point? Well, it's what's called the irrelevant ideal in projective geometry because it vanishes at the origin, whereas when we have nothing at all, the ideal is instead the unit ideal. And so one always pays careful attention to this in projective geometry. And we need to pay exactly as careful attention because all subsets are equally valid to us. We don't distinguish between the empty. I mean, the empty set is another subset we have to take into account carefully when it's present and when it's not present. Okay, so there's another situation in which one realizes simplicial complexes, which I think perhaps is less familiar than either of these. And that is that we live in too few dimensions to easily see the following relationship that corners. I mean, we live in very rectilinear habitats generally, right? I mean, everywhere you look, you see corners where different rectilinear objects are meeting each other and forming points. Corners correspond, if you were to attempt a classification of corners, you'd be attempting a classification of simplicial complexes. And to see this, there is, to see this, it helps to label the unit hypercube by subsets. Of 1 through n. So let me draw a cube in 3 dimensions. So this is the typical drawing. I'll be filling in some of these circles with solids sometimes. That's why I do it this way. So I want to think of this as corresponding to this coordinate system, the usual coordinate system, where I'm going to just call it coordinates 1, 2, and 3. So the back corner, I think of this as being a standard cube in positive. You know, it's a standard cube whose corners are all possible 0, 1 vectors. And I'm thinking of the 0, 1 vectors as indicator vectors of the subsets. So, for example, the origin stands for the empty set, whereas these corners 1, 2, and 3 stand for the sets just of one element. And then the other corners stand for the set of 1, 2, the set 2, 3, the set 1, 3. And then the opposite corner diagonally from the origin, the 1, 1, 1 corner, stands for the set 1, 2, 3. Okay. So now, the point of such a hypercube is that when you're presented with any corner, you can center that hypercube around the corner. And the corner is formed by a surface dividing space into two halves. And you can look which corners, which vertices of the hypercube lie on one side and which vertices of the hypercube lie on the other side. So let me form a corner. I'm going to draw some extraneous stuff just so you can see a little better what corner I'm trying to draw. Okay, so I want to study that corner there. I want to know how would I classify that corner there? Well, I can draw a certain amount of my picture that I have over here. What I'm picturing is imagining centering this hypercube, so its center is right at this point I'm trying to measure. So I only see above this corner 3 of the 8 possible vertices of the hypercube. So this is the amount, this is the portion of the hypercube that sort of sticks up above the corner. But if I go and look at this corner by redrawing the entire hypercube, then I can mark down, you know, by coloring in which of the vertices of the hypercube were obscured from view, and the vertices that were obscured from view were precisely the 5 I just shaded in as solid. Okay? And if I look at what their labels are, this is 0, 1, 2, 1, 2, and 3, and that corresponds to, now I'll do just the one advantage of the geometric realization, it's just a lot quicker to draw than the other one, is that the simplicial complex that I get that records what I saw is this simplicial complex. Okay? So, corners are going to play a role again when once we've had a chance to explain Alexander duality. I would say if you play around in 4 dimensions, you start getting enough varieties of corners to see different effects that you don't see in our world. Corners whose simplicial complex is acyclic, you know, even though it's an interesting corner, that sort of thing. Okay. So now our interest in corners is that one way of thinking about an ideal, a monomial ideal, is just to draw a solid object, which is a picture of that monomial ideal. And what I'm going to show you today is that the corners of that picture support the Betti numbers that Soren has been talking about, and that the way you calculate those Betti numbers is just to pick off the simplicial complexes that go with those corners, and you'll recognize them as this K of B object that, Soren introduced today. Okay. So, but before I can do that, it's essential that I introduce Alexander duality. Okay, so Alexander duality is typically stated for spheres. Okay, so it is the following theorem. Let X, and now X is a topological space sitting inside a sphere, be a proper non-empty subset of S n minus 2. Now, in most books, you'll see it Sn, but Sn minus 2 is what I get when I take my full simplex on n vertices and just punch out the interior. So I want to keep consistent notation so I don't change indices a lot during this lecture. Then we have isomorphisms of reduced homology, which can be defined for any homology theory you like, that the reduced homology of X with respect to any particular group is isomorphic to the reduced cohomology n minus I minus 3. Part of the reason for that 3, it's usually a 1 in books, is this minus 2 I've thrown in on you, of X with respect to, of the complement S n minus 2 removing X with the same group. And you can get the same theorem where you put the I's upstairs instead and the n minus I minus 3 downstairs. It's exactly the same statement. Okay? So a simple example convince you that you see this happen. So the example that I'd like to study is to take n equals 4. So I want to study S2, a sphere, an ordinary sphere. Okay? So if I draw an ordinary sphere, and I take X to be the great circle, which is the equator of that sphere. So X is equal to the equator. Okay. And then, if I want to understand what the complement looks like, the complement will consist of two open pieces. So the open southern hemisphere and the open northern hemisphere is the set S2 remove X. Okay? And now, if we calculate H1 of X, the dimension of H1 of X is 1 because X is a circle. And if we go and we calculate the dimension of H, now I have to use reduced homology to get this to come out right. Ordinary homology would count 1 for the first component, but that's acyclic. We want a 0 to say that a contractible thing is trivial. So we want to start counting with the second one. So reduced homology does that for us. It's an H0, reduced cohomology. And 0 is n minus I minus 3, so it agrees with this theorem. And dimension H0 of S2 complement X is also equal to 1. Okay, so this is an instance of Alexander duality. Okay. So I want to look at this simplicially. The standard way to represent the two-sphere simplicially would be to just draw the boundary of an ordinary tetrahedron. Okay? And let me label my vertices 1, 2, 3, 4. So I'm taking the full simplex minus the interior 1, 2, 3, 4. Again, I'm still sticking to n equals 4. And that's going to be my model for S2. Okay. So inside S2, I want to draw something like an equator. So I'm going to take the circle to be just the circle 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay? So X is the simplicial complex whose maximal faces are 1, 2, 2, 3, 3, 4, 1, 4. I'm economizing further by only listing the maximal faces. Okay? Actually, I shouldn't. 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. There's the complete list of what's in X. Okay? But now, I can break up the complement of X in the sphere into two pieces, corresponding to the upper and lower hemispheres in that other picture. So the first piece consists of these two triangles glued together, and the second piece consists of these two triangles glued together. And this is our model for F2 remove X. But I want to, now I want to exchange dimensions. I want to replace each maximal facet, each facet of the simplex by a point, each point by a facet. You know, take the polar polytope in the language, for example, of Ziegler's book on polytopes. And what I get is you can see that you can deformation retract these pictures onto the portion of the polar drawing that, you know, sits entirely inside these pictures, so that I actually get two line segments here. And now, to complete the convention, I'm going to label each vertex by a number, which is the number not used in the corresponding facet. So this is 1, 2, 4, so therefore I'll label this vertex as 3. In some sense, it's dead opposite this vertex 3 here. So this is 3. Similarly, this is going to be 1. This vertex here is 4, because it's opposite the 4 over there. This vertex here is 2. And I want to define the dual complex, X dual, to be, now, it's the empty set, it has each vertex, but then the maximal facets are 1, 3, and 2, 4. Okay? So the Alexander duality theorem would tell us that the cohomology and homology theories of homology and cohomology of X and X dual are related by the same formulas. Even though by making this contraction to a polar simplicial complex, I've kept everything combinatorial. I no longer need to think of open sets, which are complements of spheres. I can just label those combinatorics. And as you would expect, there is a straightforward combinatorial way of recovering what is the operation of taking X and translating X to X dual. And what that is you proceed in two steps. The first thing you do is you complement the set of sets, X, inside delta, which makes a certain amount of sense because that's sort of what we're doing over there, right? It's inside the full simplex. So what do we get if we do that? Let's call this XC. Then XC is going to consist of everything. That certainly wasn't in there. And then 2, 3, 4 isn't in there. 1, 3, 4 isn't in there. 1, 2, 4 isn't in there. 1, 2, 3 isn't in there. And then there are two of the six possible pairs. We've listed four of them. It's the diagonals missing that aren't in there. So we have 2, 4 isn't in there, and 1, 3 isn't in there. This gives us an intermediate set, listing the faces not contained in the social complex. And then from there, we now complement the elements of X individually inside the set of vertices, 1 through n, 1, 2, 3, 4 in this case. And now 1, 2, 3, 4 complements to the empty set, 2, 3, 4 complements to 1, and so forth, 2, 4 complements to 1, 3, 1, 3 complements to 2, 4. So we get a combinatorial definition. Now, one should always be suspicious of restrictions I mean, it's a general character that, I mean, I love geometry, but geometry is classically always had 4/5 of the proof covering special cases, right? Whereas an elegant computer program always accidentally gets the special cases right to unclutter your mind so you can think about the general pattern. And what we want to do here is accidentally get the special cases right so we never really have to think about them. And these restrictions, you know, have to make you wonder from that point of view, what are they doing there? Do they really belong there or not? Well, let's complete the picture looking at the cases that aren't covered by the classical Alexander Duhalde theorem. And the two cases are, first of all, the empty case. If we take X to be equal to just the empty set, then this definition of the dual is going to be the entire simplex minus 1 through n, which is isomorphic to S n minus 2. Okay? And if we instead take the void complex, so X consists of nothing at all, then X dual consists of everything. These are both acyclic. So all H star equals H star 0. Whereas, you know, for the first case, if we take H minus 1 of just the empty set, the chain complex, which calculates homology for the empty set, only has a dimension sitting in degree minus 1 corresponding to the empty set itself. It's surrounded by zeros. So that is its homology. You get a one dimension for homology there. And corresponding to that, we know that H, this is H twiddle for reduced homology, that H n minus 2 of the n minus 2 sphere also has the correct dimension. The dimension is again 1. So we see that, in fact, Alexander duality does carry out for arbitrary subsets. It was just stated sort of in geometrically imaginable cases first when people work in this sphere. But when we see Alexander duality in algebra, it will apply without our having to hesitate as to whether our sets fit the hypothesis or not. So we have the theorem, which is simplicial Alexander duality. So X, any simplicial complex, on n vertices. You know, in other words, if X is sitting inside delta, you know, the full simplex on n vertices, then we get the same isomorphisms of reduced simplicial homology now. Hi of X is isomorphic to H upper n minus I minus 3 of X dual. And similarly for the other direction. Now, this has been noticed by a variety of people in a variety of contexts, but when you look at early proofs of things in this area, people often prove this relationship without identifying it. And we'll see how that comes up. But often, we are more naturally going to recognize one simplicial complex or the other in a given problem, but then we'll wish we'd recognize the other because the other one is easier to describe to somebody else. And so, you know, some of the main theorems involving Betti numbers are going to fit this pattern where it's easiest for us to say for one of these, for X, but then we'd like to state the theorem instead for X dual, and this will tell us how they relate. Okay, so the easiest place to see Alexander duality combinatorially and make some sense out of it is corners again. Okay, so in fact, let me just relabel this, X in this situation is the empty set 1, 2, 3, and 1, 2. Okay. Well, if you imagine that a corner is made out of a rectilinear hypersurface, that you can stand on one side of the boundary and look at it and get one impression of what the corner looks like. Or you can walk around behind the set and look at the other side of the surface, and it's still a corner. It's just the corner has been flipped over. It's the obverse of the corner, right? Then when you draw the corner the other way, you're going to see a different simplicial complex in general. Sometimes you'll see the same simplicial complex. So what is the matching piece of the puzzle? If this is made out of wooden blocks, what is the matching piece of the puzzle that we would have to fit in there in order to fit this together to fill space? Well, I'm going to do something akin to this relabeling here, where I sort of borrowed numbers from the opposite vertex to get the new numbers. And what I'd like to say that the dual corner is in our situation is simply this corner here. Where this is my one direction, this is my two direction, this is my three direction. Okay? So in other words, I'm going to look at this point here, and what you see is that you can pick this up and you can rotate it so that the one there is opposite diagonally from the one in this picture, the two there is opposite diagonally from the two in this picture, and so forth. So I've captured polarity as I pick it up and slip it in. But when I slip it in, it locks together and fills that corner out. So it's the opposite. That's what the opposite side of that corner looks like, is what I've just drawn here. And now, if I make a probe hypercube to measure the simplicial complex that goes with that corner, then what do I see? Well, I have all four sort of top corners, top vertices of the hypercube, and sort of one of the four bottom vertices. And the way this thing sort of runs into the surface is, you know, when I stick the probe cube in and see what vertices are hanging out when vertices aren't hanging out, this is what I see. And if I draw the entire probe cube in order to read off what the dual simplicial complex, what the corner simplicial complex is, then the three buried vertices of the hypercube are this vertex, and this vertex. So the dual corner corresponds to the simplicial complex, empty set, 1 and 2. So X dual is equal to the empty set, 1 and 2. Now duality works both ways, so we can complement in delta first, and the set we get when we complement in delta is take everything we left out, 1, 2, 3, 1, 3, 2, 3, we've got 1 leaves out 2, 3, 2 leaves out 1, 3, 1, 2, and 3. And then we complement the individual elements in the set 1, 2, 3. And what we get is the empty set 1, 2, 3, and 1, 2. So you can see by the operation I said was Alexander duality that applying Alexander duality to this simplicial complex measuring this corner is dual to the simplicial complex which measured this other corner. But in fact, you know, one can see both of these operations in terms of the cube itself. If I draw, you know, three copies of the cube and describe what it looks like in terms of the cube to carry out those operations, okay. Start. Let's be systematic about this. These notes will be on the web, so if you feel you're in a drawing race with me trying to write this down, you could just, you know, sort of chill. Of course, the way I'm doing right now, you probably are way ahead of me. Okay, let's start over here with our simplicial complex up there, x, and we draw the picture for x. Empty 1, 1, 2, 2, 3, and then what is it? Now we can actually, I implied that there was a preferred order to doing this. You can exchange those two operations. They are like two generators of the Klein-Ford group. I mean, you can take those two operations in either sequence, and they have the same effect of together dualizing. So what I would like to do is first complement, you can do it either order, but let's complement in 1, 2, 3, the sets. All that means is take the, mark the vertices that you didn't mark the first time, right? So these are the vertices that were left out, okay? Now the advantage of drawing it this way is that now it's completely clear in general that what you've done corresponds to two puzzle pieces that fit together to form everything, and one is a corner one way and one is the same corner looked at the other way. That's why I wanted to draw this picture like this. Only now, we're still labeled, this is 1, 2, 3, this is 2, 3, and this is 1, 3. But now, if we complement, I'm doing this wrong. This is what I said. This is complementing the subsets in the simplex, right? By marking the other vertices, I'm taking the subsets I didn't take before. So I am complementing in the simplex. So now I want to complement in 1, 2, 3. So what does it mean to complement in 1, 2, 3? It just means label in the opposite way. So this is labeled by empty set. This is labeled by 2. This is labeled by 1. And then when you look at this, it looks like the corner I drew over here. And now the only thing is now there's an extra step if you want the pictures to work out, which is to flip it so that you have it back where you wanted it to be. So that you want to take this as the new origin. Take the opposite corner as a new origin. So I just roll this picture around. Okay? And when I roll this picture around, I get this picture here. Where now I put the empty set down here, and I put 1 here, and I put 2 here where I want it to be. So that's a complete combinatorial description of what these pictures fitting together looks like. Any questions about this while we're doing it? Yes? The second box to the last one. Yeah. That's what we're doing. Yes, yes. It's really multiplying by minus 1. If you put the origin in the middle of it, it's a minus 1. So what was the comment? I mean, one feels, this isn't all checked in all cases, but, you know, one feels there is only one duality theory. And there's evidence here. If you notice, if you've played around with duality theories in algebra, such as fair duality and algebraic geometry, there's always these factors of n that slip into things. You know, like when you take you take some kind of dualizing sheaf and project a space and so forth. And what is that factor of n? That factor of n is that it's sort of n steps in the Manhattan metric to get from here to here. That it's just turning the cube around, and you've now exchanged where the origin is. You want to move it back to where you thought it would be. That's the factor of n. You just shifted by n degrees. When you shifted by the degree equal to the number of variables in order to do this last step in rolling this thing around. So I claim that in any situation, I claim that when you can recover things such as stereo duality in a sufficiently combinatorial situation to line it up with what we're doing here, you will see that that is what the factor of n is in those cases. Okay? So I would like to do an example, okay, on this board now. Okay, I'm going to do two examples. The first example is going to be an example that comes from the twisted cubic. So the phenomena we saw yesterday in my lecture, and again several times in Soren's lectures, I want to take b squared, bc, and c squared as an ideal. So I is an ideal in S, which is going to be in just the variables b and c. So I'm dropping a and d from the initial ideal of the twisted cubic. Okay? And the reason I'm doing that is for comfort. I just want to draw pictures in two dimensions. Okay? So let's first of all, what I want to do is see how corners and and Alexander duality and so forth, how does this all relate to the Betty numbers of ideals, which is what we've been studying since we started. Well, we first need to know what the resolution of I looks like. And Soren has established enough machinery that I can easily draw the resolution. I'll start with what would be the Taylor complex. So I'm going to write b squared, bc, and c squared. And I'm going to then fill in a full simplex. And this has degree b squared c, this has degree bc squared, this has degree b squared c squared, this has degree b squared c squared. And if I were to use this as a model for a resolution, I realize that I'm going to see a constant, because the boundary of the triangle is going to include this face. They have the same degree, so it'll be a coefficient of 1 were I to use this. I want to draw the minimal resolution instead. So I'm going to erase both this face and the interior of the triangle. That, in the usual language, is like canceling out a free sum end of S goes to S goes to 0. As Soren mentioned, any free resolution differs from a minimal free resolution by, you know, extra sum ends like this. Here I'm able combinatorially to remove that extra sum end. And now I have a picture. I can check by the criterion that Soren described that this picture is acyclic. I mean, it's a line, it's contractible. But moreover, for any multi-degree that I care about, the restricted part of it in that multi-degree is acyclic. Like if I look in degree b squared c, I don't see this stuff. But what's left is acyclic, and so forth. So the homogenized version of the chain complex for this picture does give me the minimal resolution. So let me put arrows on things so I can write it down. And I get a minimal resolution. I is generated by b squared, bc, and c squared. And so I have 3 copies of S here. But now this edge here is going to drop off. We drop down by b. Imagine we're up on a high step. It's a b squared c step. We step down by b to get to bc. So we have b, we're on the forward edge of that arrow. And stepping off the other way, we step down by c to get to b squared. So I get a minus c for the b squared and a 0. And I do the other edge the same way, and I drop off a b on the c squared, and I drop off a c on the bc. And this completes the resolution. So, you know, as a practical matter, I mean, we use this stuff all the time. We just want to, like, not bother with a computer program, as we want to imagine it in our heads. This is how we come up with resolutions of simple examples. Okay, so I want to understand the Betty numbers that I've calculated here. Basically, what this corresponds to is the generators, B0 of 2,0 is equal to Betty 0 of 1,1 is equal to Betty 0 of 0,2. These are all 1, indicating the 3 degrees of the 3 generators, b squared, bc, and c squared. And then the two syzygies, B1 of 2-1 is equal to B1 of 1-2 is also equal to 1. That's because the total degree, the degree in which the cancellation is taking place, the degree is labeled here, B squared C and BC squared, are 2-1 and 1-2. And you remember in my first talk, we worried for a little while about what was going on, B star, is there any contribution in degree 2, 2? And we concluded that no matter what I was, there was no contribution in 2, 2. So now we'd like to understand that more geometrically. Okay. So my favorite way of geometrically thinking about a monomial ideal is to draw a solid picture in Rn, if I'm in n variables, which is a picture of the monomial ideal. Okay. So let's draw a picture of this monomial ideal. Okay. So this is like my B axis. This is like my C axis. And I have the three generators here, here, and here. This is my generator B squared. This is my generator BC. This is my generator C squared. And the ideal consists, among other things, the monomials in the ideal are all monomials that are in first quadrant starting at any of these three points. So, you know, all monomials either in this orthant or this orthant or this orthant, many monomials are in several, right? But I want to fill this picture in. You know, a realization of the monomial ideal in this sense would be just to take the solid mass, which is all of the stuff that is greater than, in each coordinate separately, at least one of these vertices. And I get this picture for the monomial ideal. Okay, so from that point of view, the three Betti numbers that are supposed to be 1 are where? They're here, here, and here. And the two Betti numbers that are supposed to be 1 representing first syzygies are where? They're here and here. And then I have a question about what happens here. That's supposed to be 0. Okay? So we can draw in, and another place, you know, just to check is supposed to be 0, is when we're sitting strictly outside the ideal. So let me draw a hypercube probes to measure each of these corners. Okay? So I'll start with drawing one here. A hypercube in this case is just going to be a square, right? So let me just quickly draw squares around each corner that I'm interested in thinking about. Okay. And then let me go around and shade in the vertice. So now I decide, now you hear the paradox for corners here. You know, let me finish off this edge and this edge. Yeah. Is that, you know, even to decide what corner we're looking at, we've got to decide which way our vantage point is when we see the corner. But you know, I want to stick with the convention I followed here. It's sort of the deepest inside corner is the origin, right? So we have a natural bias here that this vertex is the origin, right? So to be consistent with what I did before, our vantage point is we're looking down like this, right? So if I want to mark the vertices of the square that are buried inside each of these corners, well, all four vertices of this square are buried inside because we're deep inside, out of view, away from the ideal. Whereas these three corners are buried inside. This corner alone, this is buried inside. These three vertices are buried inside. None of these vertices are buried inside. This is buried inside. These three are buried inside. Okay? And I get various simplicial complexes that go with this. So what are the, let's take four examples. 1, B squared, B squared C, and B squared C squared. okay? And one, I had all four corners. D squared, I had these three. B squared C, I just had this one. And B squared C squared, I had nothing. And the sets, the simplicial complex that we get when we look at this, this is everything. Here, X consists of two points. Here, X just consists of the empty set. And here, X consists of the void complex. Everything is a segment. Thank you. Okay. So now, this does not agree with what Soren introduced today, which is the K sub B complexes. But you can see already that this is typical of why you want to understand comfortably Alexander duality, is that, you know, it's picking up any penny on the ground. It's going to be the wrong side up half the time. You know, if you don't switch it easily, you're stuck, right? So we actually wanted the other one. You know, this seemed natural, but we wanted the other one. So we dualize, and this is dual to the empty set. This is dual to the void complex, right? This is dual to the empty set. This is dual to two points, right? And this is dual to a line segment. And if you think about it, these are precisely the complexes K sub B, because what K sub B is measuring, I mean, the way I always think of K sub B is it's a simplicial complex telling you which combinations of directions you can go down without leaving the ideal, right? So here, you're in the ideal, and you can go down by either B or C, and you're still in the ideal. So that corresponds to two points. Here, you're in the ideal, but any step down takes you outside the ideal. So you, only the empty move leaves you in the ideal. So that corresponds to the empty set. So this works out nicely. And you can see that H minus 1, let's use little h minus 1 is equal to 1 here. Little h 0 is equal to 1 here. And that corresponds by the formula Soren gave to the correct Betti numbers for this picture. But, you know, let's back off of the particular detail of this particular problem. And what is now obvious to us? What is now obvious to us is, you know, if someone says, I've got a monomial ideal, where are its syzygies? Well, they're at corners. I mean, think about moving this probe around someplace which is not a corner. If there's a direction you can slide the probe either way without changing what it sees, then there is a direction in which you can either add that vertex or not to your simplicial complex, and it doesn't matter. The simplicial complex is actually a cone over that vertex. So it's an exercise. You get something acyclic whenever you're not actually at a corner. In particular, if you're inside the interior of the solid blob, which is the ideal, then you're acyclic. Or if you're outside the solid blob, which is the ideal, strictly outside or strictly inside, you're also acyclic. So the information, these numerical data we're interested in is supported on the skin of the ideal. That's the easy statement. The slightly harder statement is, unless you're actually at an explicit corner of the ideal, then you are zero. So it's precisely the corners of the surface of the ideal that support these Betti numbers. And not all corners. As I said, in four dimensions, you can have interesting corners which are acyclic. So that part becomes clear. Another area which becomes clear, it's been of great interest understanding what aspects of ideals and anything like this are characteristic dependent. Okay? Well, here you can see that how would you build characteristic dependence of a resolution of a monomial ideal? I mean, there are famous examples. I'm going to show you a famous example in my next lecture. But it's now clear that you can rig a monomial ideal to have any desired corner you want. I mean, the same way we build corners, right? And so all you do is think of a simplicial complex whose homology depends on the characteristic of the field. Rig a monomial ideal which has that simplicial complex as one of its corners. And you've now rigged a monomial ideal which has resolution which is characteristic dependent. Okay. So what I'm going to do on the next lecture is restrict to a special case, which is when the monomial ideal is square free. It's generated by products of variables to the first power. Those correspond globally to simplicial complexes. And this whole theory specializes very nicely. And it's very interesting to take the Alexander dual of the total space and see what ideal you get and study its properties and compare them. So have fun in your seminars after lunch.